Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast, Interview Edition. And today we bring to you a special guest because he is one of Tavis's best friends from way, way back. And not only does he bring a wealth of knowledge of his business career, his journey from El Salvador, but more importantly, he brings stories about Tavis in the early days, tattoo culture, skateboard culture, graffiti, and they talk great links about their days growing up and what brought them both down different paths, but to today where they're getting to use their art in different ways and their creativity in different ways. He talks about business. We also get into a little bit about his dreams about short-term rentals and how he can use his creativity there. It's an amazing interview. And at his request, he wanted just the most legit Real Estate Heavyweights enter the ring announcement. So here we go.
Bienvenidos todos los millones de personas en todo el mundo. Hoy tenemos una persona especial con nosotros, uno de los jefes originalmente del Wallow Inc., un gigante del mundo del marketing de Dallas, un amigo de Tavis y futuro Airbnb magnate. Ahora, entra el ring de los Real Estate Heavyweights, Walter Wally Barraza.
But something along the line, what I realized is that in those two ventures, right, whether one of them was this small little candy thing and the other one was actually one where I was considering dropping out of college to do it, I realized that I had to put systems in place. The guys that me and Tavis were back then in 10th grade to where I am now, you know, high school me wouldn't have told me, yeah, that's where you're going to end up, right? I would have never said that.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast, an interview edition. And today we have an amazing guest. It's a special guest for us because he is a good friend of Tavis's. Tavis will probably, you know, kind of guide this interview a little bit more than I do sometimes. And because the guy today and Tavis go way, way back into the high school days. And so he's got all sorts of cool stories for us for Tavis, that I'm sure we will all want to know. I have heard of him several times. Tavis tells a lot of cool stories about this guy, and he just seems like a really interesting dude, super creative, has a lot of life experience, a lot of really good business experience. And that's why today we want to introduce you to Walter Barraza. Barraza. I can't roll my R's, Walter. So you'll have to correct me. I'm trying to get better. You know, if I could live in a Latin country for a while and get better, that's probably one trip I would love to make before I pass on to the next plane. But I will get better at my R's at some point. But all that being said, thanks for joining us today.
No, greatly appreciated, Ashton. You actually did really well, man, on the Barraza, man. A lot of people don't do as well as you did. So kudos, man.
Yeah, I have to put a little bit too much energy behind it, so it sounds kind of aggressive, but I'll get more relaxed at some point.
You know? Well, you do have a microphone. You could, you know, and we are, you know, the heavyweights. So you could have done like the big, you know, announcement, like he was coming to the ring.
Yeah, I can work on that. Yeah, nice. Maybe I'll do that for the intro. Yeah, we'll go boxing intro for this one. So cool story, awesome, man. Well, I know Tavis has known you for a long time. Why don't you go ahead and give us sort of your background, you know, where you grew up. I know you guys met over here, I think over in Irving, maybe in the Dallas area. So kind of give us a background on, you know, your growing up and what brought you to where you are today. And then we can kind of get into what you do for work and that sort of thing.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. And I was actually born in El Salvador in 1979. My family came here early 80s because of a civil war that was happening there. So got here to Irving and pretty much lived in Irving all my life, except for about 3 years in L.A. and then 3 years in Houston. And then throughout high school and on, that's when I met Tavis. I met Tavis in 10th grade in art class, actually. And the Tavis that you see today and the version of me that you see today, we were two different guys back then. Definitely. So, you know, eventually went to school, decided to kind of figure out what to do with art. I was always into art. My parents, my dad was very artistic. He painting, drawing. So I had that in me, trying to figure out what to do with that and how to make money from it. Right. And then eventually just kind of decided to go to school, and one thing led to another. And, you know, here I am now, with a business partner running an advertising agency here in the DFW and working on a lot of national and global clients. So very interesting path that life takes you on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So did you have a business background? You know, is that something that you had to kind of feel out? I'm sure when you were in 10th grade and you and Tavis are, you know, sketching in art class and, you know, drawing on skateboards and stuff like that. Like, that is a different world. You know, I toured Tavis's office the other day and he was showing me some stuff. It was really, you know, he has a really cool piece of art from high school that he didn't complete. And then he's got some, you know, cool skateboards. I don't know that those originated in high school, but the whole skateboard tattoo world of Tavis is something probably most people who listen don't really know that part of him. The only artistic part of Tavis they know is that he does house design now. So he's kind of filtered his passion into the house design. So when you were going through high school and you kind of came out through college, did you know you wanted to go into business for yourself? You're just kind of like, well, I like art. I'm going to kind of figure it out and we'll see what happens after this.
Yeah. I wanted to jump in there real quick, Ashton, because, you know, part of what we talk about here in these different podcasts, and, you know, we just had Eric on the show and, you know, what a mind transformation he had to go through, mm-hmm. you know, to go through the trials and tributes he's had in his life. But, you know, ultimately it was up to him to change that trajectory. And, you know, what's cool about Walter and I's story, and we won't go too deep, but I'll put it this way. We didn't hang out with the best crowd, and Walter and I were associated with several different people that were outcast and in gangs and didn't end up doing so well in their life. Walter and I didn't ever really get too deep with them, but that's kind of who we related to, partly just from the way we grew up. And I think where we felt comfort to some degree, you know, we didn't, like I said, didn't get too deep. We kind of kept arm's length. But like for me, you know, I would draw a lot of tattoos for guys, you know, for friends of ours that were in associate gangs and things like that, or they'd get locked up, you know, and they want me to draw tattoos or different ideas for them and things like that. And, but Walter and I just, we both had a passion for drawing and sketching and things like that. We met in art class. And I think, you know, one of the things that I remember with Walter is we had this one teacher, and, I can't remember her name, but maybe Walter does, but anyways, Walter and I had very different styles when it came to drawing, and we were doing a still life. We were in advanced classes. You know, we had a passion for art, and for me, that was kind of my ticket to college in my mind, not knowing, you know, what was in front of it. It was just kind of like that was the next step, and the only thing that I associated with school with that I liked was art, you know. And so anyways, we met in art class, both had two different styles. I was very detailed and into a lot of different, you know, aspects and really trying to create what I saw in person and replicate that on paper. Walter had a very simplistic style, very simplistic, very clean, very simplistic. And it was funny because Walter, I was one of those that I was proud of my work, and I was a little arrogant and cocky with it. Walter wasn't. He was very kind of shy about it in a way, you know, kind of did the work and he's like, yeah, you know, here's what I did. And the art teacher was like, this is amazing. And so she put it up, and I believe it went all the way to DC, and you got a presidential award. Maybe I'm mistaking with that, but I remember you getting, you know, some crazy award with this one still life that you did. And that created that opportunity. And I think that was a turning point in your life where somebody was like showing you a different road, right? It was showing you that, hey, you've got possibilities in front of you, man. You need to chase it. And we talk about that here and there about that opportunity, but I remember that being a huge turning point in your life to where, you know, maybe art wasn't really that, you know, your driving factor before. I know you were big into football and things like that when we were in school, but I think that might have been a turning point. So I'll let you talk about that a little bit, just kind of where that took your mindset and kind of how things developed from that point to dive into that.
Definitely, man. I think a nice blast from the past. So it's interesting because I never thought that my creative art abilities was something that I could, you know, build a career on and cash in on and go big on. Back then, I thought I actually wanted to go become an architect, actually. In that art contest that that Tavis was mentioning, our art teacher, she just submitted this thing. And next thing you know, I'm meeting Congress people and all the way up to DC, and ended up getting a scholarship to Savannah College of Art and Design, where I did want to go become an architect. And the deeper I dove into that, something that I had never really touched on, I just had seen it, I realized this wasn't the road for me. What I was doing back then was, I don't know if you remember this, Tavis, I was kind of the party flyer, party poster guy. So I was doing all the posters, all the flyers for people, hand drawing, cutting out stuff and making copies. And so I was the guy that everybody went to when they needed a really cool flyer, right? Little did I know that that's what I would eventually go into, is the advertising, right? So, but that turning point that Tavis mentioned, it was kind of like this moment where, like Tavis, what Tavis is saying is true, is like every time I did something, you know, regardless of at what level it was, I never really thought, oh, wow, this thing's amazing. I was like, oh, I can do better. Oh, I can do better. So that moment kind of took me down this trajectory of like, let me figure out this art thing and let me see where it takes me. So I ended up going to, I took some classes at Northlake College for about 2.5-3 years before I realized, oh, I can do graphic design. And then from there, I was like, well, what can I do with this now? And then I ran across advertising, where I also like to write. I also like to shoot video. I shot a lot of video back then, and basically merged graphic design and all my passions. And that was advertising. So I went into advertising and been doing that since, man, my 20s, 23, 24 years old now. Did that for a lot of big corporations, a lot of big agencies, learned what I needed to learn. And it was in my first agency after working at the Richards Group. So I worked at the Richards Group and decided that type of culture, agency culture, wasn't a fit for me. It was a bit more rowdy and crazier. That was too corporate.
That's a huge group, right? That's a huge Dallas group.
Yeah, they're here in Dallas. I mean, when I was there, I mean, I think it was over 800 of us in that office.
Good group.
Off of 75, I think Topgolf took part of their offices now, and Match.com is in there. But I mean, we were about 800 or so, started working on Chick-fil-A right out of college, where I'm like, man, I'm working on some really cool stuff here. Mm-hmm. But just the culture.
Was the cow your idea? Please tell me the cow.
Oh, man.
Painting signs, you eat more chicken. That was your idea. I'm giving that one to you. You can just
I'll take it, man. That's awesome, man. I wish. So that was one of their big, you know, moments in advertising. I think they did that in, like, man, late 80s, early 90s, I believe. But
let me ask you this,
though,
for like in that culture, this is a little diversion, but so you hear these stories about big companies, and like, let's say the guy who came up with the idea for the chicken nugget, you know, he just worked in the back room. He came up with this idea. So if you're in an agency like that, how much credit does the actual designer get for that? Does that person get a huge bonus? Is it a pat on the back? Hey, we're going to run with this. Or like, how does that, if you come up with a real iconic thing, how does that play? Or does that launch you into your, now you can go to your own agency? Hey, I'm the guy who came up with the cow. How does that work out?
So it's a little bit of what you said, right? You, depending on the agency that you're at, you will get that credit and it will launch your trajectory. Like your career is going to take off. So there's a lot of global advertising awards that once you submit those ideas and they get recognized, that's when all the different agencies around the world see your name. And that's when they kind of start going after you.
Okay.
And it's interesting, depending on where you're at, some agencies will just take that idea and run with it, right? And own it as the agency. And then really good agencies also honor the person that did it, right? Reward them and take care of them as well, too.
Cool.
So it just really depends on where you're at.
That's awesome. But, so, Walter, I remember early on, so what's wild with us is, you know, we both graduated. Walter kind of went the college route. Meantime, you were working pawn shop. We'd kind of run into each other here and there. I think, you know, right after high school, our senior year of high school, a little bit after that, we both kind of got into the graffiti scene a little bit and got some stories there. We won't you know, self-criminate ourselves, but we had a lot of fun. Again, it was creative art, and then you had the adrenaline rush with it as well. That came from doing things we weren't supposed to be doing. But and then I kind of got into the tattoo scene a little bit, just kind of creating and designing stuff and hanging out with some other tattoo artists, and kind of thought that would be cool. And anyways, we kind of lost touch there for a little bit, you know, in our early 20s. You know, I got married pretty early. I got married at 22. And so it wasn't until like 2009 until Facebook kind of became a big thing. And I think we reconnected there. And so we had a lot of catching up to do, you know, when we reconnected. And at that point, you were working for a big agency. And I remember seeing some of the stuff that you did. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but I remember seeing one of the things, and you could tell me if you did it or not, but it was an insurance commercial or an insurance print ad, I believe. And it was maybe Allstate, or it was one of the bigger brands. And it was an alligator that had a stripe painted over it in the middle of the street, like Louisiana Street. Was that yours?
Yeah. So interesting you bring that one up. So basically replaced all the white stripes in the middle of the road with these like albino white alligators. And the whole idea was that, you know, the road is an unknown world. So any moment, you know, this thing will take a swipe at you, which is, you know, a metaphor for a pothole type of thing. And
yeah. Well, it was wild as I knew that, right, from like different magazines that I would be subscribed to. So I'd seen that advertisement, you know, several times. Then when I realized it was you, it was pretty cool. One of those really cool aha moments, you know. It was like, oh, wow, I had no idea that it was Walter that did it. Because it was one of those things that it stood out enough because it was, again, it was simplistic, but it was a huge statement in what it was, right? And that's something you've always been great at with doing that. So nevertheless, you worked for the big corporation at a turning point, and this was what, I forget exactly how many years ago now that you and Lalo connected. Because even when we did that skateboard show that Ashton mentioned earlier, you know, was a nonprofit art show that you put together, and it was kind of a cool thing. You can kind of talk about that for a second, but I think it was after that that you and Lalo decided to start Wallo, WALO, and then it's walloinc.com, right?
Yeah, man. Perfect. So I remember that show actually. This was probably around 2013. I wanted to do something to give back to kids, just knowing how I grew up and a lot of the kids that I grew up with and all the good charity that we received from different organizations, right? And I wanted to do something that was impactful immediately. So we put together this art show, and that was kind of the turning point when we realized, like, you know what, man, I think we need to start doing our own thing. And in 2014, we left our cushy jobs and security and all that, and started the agency with no clients, no money coming in. We lived off our savings. We built this really nice office. I think Tavis, you came in there and checked it out a couple of times. And,
yeah, it was legit. It was down in the book depository building, wasn't it? Yeah, and then right across from the Holocaust Museum, right?
Yeah, so exactly. So that's where we had the office, and you know, day one, everything's built out. We sunk in all our money. We show up to the office, right? It's just me and Lalo, a longtime friend that I met in one of the agencies I worked at. Showed up to the office, and we realized it's like, all right, now what do? We built everything. We got a plan. We got a vision. Where's the money? and that's when we decided we got our first reality check of like, all right, now we got to start grinding it out and start hitting up clients and cold emailing, cold calling, and putting together basically like pitch work to say, hey, you're doing this currently, but you could do better. Check this out. And I think eventually from August 2014 to May of 2015, we landed our first big account, which was, I don't know if you know the Mexican sodas, the colorful bottles, the glass bottles, Jarritos, pretty much see them everywhere. So we landed them in 2015, started working with them, and basically took the brand and worked on it from head to toe, from labels to social media, to big commercials, big productions and all that. So I think that was our first real big client where we knew it was like, okay, we're heading down the right path. But interestingly enough, we actually started our very first client. It was a nonprofit that we took was Bonton Farms, which is something that I know Tavis has a big passion for. So we actually created their logo from Bonton Farms. So that's our mark, our design, and helped them out with website and a lot of other packaging design and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
And it's amazing. I mean, that logo was, I mean, it was perfect for them, and they've blown up. They were all over the news like last week or 2 weeks ago that they got some kind of crazy multi-million dollar match donation from big corporations. So, I mean, they've blown up. I mean, it's kind of wild because I've not as involved near as much. And I mean, the trajectory and the dynamic, and it's gotten so big, and I mean, it's still doing phenomenal things, obviously, but I think it was you. Was it you that sent me a picture of the concrete truck with the Bonton Farms on it, you know, that was cruising down the street with that logo. So anyways, yeah, it's great. If you guys haven't checked them out, BontonFarms.com, you can check them out on Facebook as well. And they've got a really cool story to it. In fact, they just painted a mural in downtown Dallas of Darren Babcock down there, who was the founder of Bonton Farms there. So pretty cool.
Cool. I got a question for you, Walter. So as far as, you know, my sister listens a lot. She's a designer, decorator. She's a stager. I know some other people in the business. You know, a lot of the things that we do from a flipping standpoint and new build standpoint comes from a design eye. You know, and you're either hiring someone and you're signing off on it, or I personally like to have that creative input into things. So from a creative perspective, whenever you're going from you're sort of drawing whatever, you're doing your own art, no one really cares, into that professional realm, how do you balance that client work with your personal vision and not without getting completely offended? I'm sure it's something you sort of build up a callus to at some point. How do you go about that? Especially someone new like me, I get really offended. If I go out and I spend a bunch of time picking tile or even on this sort of thing, podcast and reels, and someone doesn't really care for it, I get offended by it. You know, it's like, wait, I put a lot of effort into that. So how have you progressed with that part of the business and design and creativity?
Great question. I think early on in my career, I was exactly like you. I'm like, I just put my heart and soul into this thing, and you're now asking me to completely change it, right? And the only thing you're keeping is like this little thing, right? Over the years, I've built what you said is like, I built this thick skin, to take the feedback, right, and analyze it and say, like, you know, what are they really asking for and why are they asking for that? But that takes experience over the years. And I know that one thing that helped me out, and it's what I teach a lot of the young team members at the office, is you got to start thinking strategically. Right. When you have this strategic foundation, it's like, what do you need to do? What's the ultimate goal? What do we need to achieve here? Every decision you make lines up to that. It kind of softens that blow. Right. It still stings because, it's, you know, you spend so much time on this idea or this thing, especially where, like, you know, you have a national TV spot that you're working on and you wrote this awesome script. Right. And then, you know, they want this tweak here, this thing there. And then you're like, well, why don't they see the vision? Well, how come they can't see it?
It kind of takes the spirit of it away. You're like, I don't know.
Yeah. And so we worked with Reliant Energy. We started working with them in 2018. And I know, like, you know, they animated Armadillo and Matthew McConaughey's the voiceover in English. And then we ended up using Salma Hayek for the Spanish side. So we pitched a lot of commercials where we thought these were the amazing things. Right. And they just get back pocketed and move on to the next. And I think it's something that over the years you build that thick skin and learn to slowly kind of detach yourself from that. Because what I tell the young people is, like, you got to separate those two things or you're not going to last in the business.
Yeah.
It'll eat you up.
And I think it's, you know, thinking about, I've heard this about Saturday Night Live in different sitcoms. They have these writing rooms. And I think probably a lot of it is just about volume. You know, when I flip one or two houses a year, every decision's pretty important to me. You know, we interviewed Eric last week. He's doing 40 new builds. I'm sure he doesn't get too caught up on what tile's in the laundry room because he's just making so many, you know, choices. And like Saturday Night Live, they meet every week and they're just throwing out idea after idea after idea. Then they'll kind of go to the next phase with a few of them. Then they'll do this phase, and then only a few of them actually make it to screen. And then next week they're all back. They're super creative. Yeah. And so I think it's just, I could see it being a volume thing. Once you just do it over and over and over, you know, something, the core of what you are, you're t- talented. They were there for a reason. They're hiring you for a reason. But, you know, they're just going to, that's just part of the game. If you're going to play the game, it's just going to be part of it that people have things. But I know right now my volume is so low that, you know, it, pretty much if someone says anything negative, it's really hard to kind of take that in and not be a little offended by it.
You know, what you said, Ashton, is exactly it. I mean, our writers are cranking out 15, 20 scripts, right? And we're producing one 30-second commercial. So we're going and sorting through all this stuff out. And then we put a certain amount in front of the client, right? And it's your best work. It's the stuff that you know. It's like, all right, this is going to make some impact. It's going to move the business. But at the same time, it's something creative that it's going to get us some recognition, right? And then ultimately, you know, it goes a completely different way. That's when you kind of have to analyze and understand why we're doing this and what ultimately they're looking for, right? But it is a volume business, and you would not believe the number of ideas that are cranked out for one campaign. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So you and Lalo kick off Wallo. You guys, you know, save money. You can give us an idea. I mean, we normally talk about when you're going to make a big change in your business model, you know, like Astra's talking about transitioning into real estate full time. You know, and we've talked about 3 to 6 months worth of reserves, you know, that will cover all your normal expenses, before you make that leap. Right. And that way it gives you enough time to generate volume and do that. And, I don't know with the advertising world. I mean, you know, sometimes your contracts might be a year out before you get paid sometimes. But if you talk about that a little bit, just in the mindset of doing that, and then, you know, you can lead up to, I mean, today, I know you have a lot of employees. I mean, you guys have a phenomenal business model. I mean, you're running a legit business and you don't have a business background that wasn't, you know, in your cards. You didn't have any mentors, yeah, you know, to set you up for that. So, I mean, to take it from just this creative mindset, you and Lalo connecting, figuring out that, hey, we can do this on our own, and then taking it to where it is today. And I mean, the level that you're at with all the employees, all the payroll, your overhead, and having to be able to manage what the business is doing, what your goals are doing on a bigger scale. I mean, because you probably have to look forward to the next couple of years as well, right? When some of these accounts are going to expire or renew and things like that. And you've got to kind of look at those trajectories out forward. Talk about that a little bit, because one of the things that we want to discuss, you know, in our podcast and just in being entrepreneurs and building a business, even though we are primarily focused on real estate, the same applications apply, right? The same mindset, the same kind of business growth, the same kind of financial discipline that comes out of that, you know. So feel free to talk about it.
Definitely. I'll start with the business background. It's interesting because the first business I ever started was actually in junior high. I don't know if I told you this story, Tavis. So what I would do is I would go to the grocery store, buy candy in bulk, and then open up all the packages and start selling them individually. Like, for instance, whether it was lollipops, you know, the Wrigley's gum. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that, and I realized, I was like, okay, I'm actually making money here, right? Nice. And it's funny enough that I use that story, right? But it's that mindset that something inside of you is telling you, do this, right? And over the years, you just have to kind of carve that out and just keep working on it and finessing it and sharpening that up. I think the mindset was there from the beginning, but it was up to me to actually focus on it, build it, and nurture it, right? Then I had another business where I was doing screen printing and t-shirt business, where mm-hmm. I was just printing out a lot of t-shirts, where I started my own brand. I would go to a lot of different concerts or skating events and just sell a ton of shirts. It was going awesome. Like, at one point I thought, I was like, you know, do I need to finish college? Can I just do this and just keep making this type of money, right? But something along the line, what I realized is that in those two ventures, right, whether one of them was this small little candy thing and the other one was actually one where I was considering dropping out of college to do it, I realized that I had to put systems in place, right? I didn't know that what it was as a business term, right? Systems or these processes, right? I knew that I had to build the model and replicate it and have it fine-tuned, right? So I was doing that all along the way. And I think that helped kind of lay the foundation. So when I started working for all these different agencies, I actually learned the craft itself, right? What we were going to actually be selling. So when me and Lalo met in 2005, I met him right off the bat. I mean, we got along. He's basically my brother. We made a deal, and it was one of those things that communication was key. So we had to be able to communicate and say, hey, here's my idea. If you can't sell me this idea in 5 minutes, we need to move on, right? So I think we built that communication structure between us that's helped us just keep, you know, excelling in the things. But early on, even then, when we first met, we knew we were going to open up an agency. And we kept telling ourselves, we're going to do this for ourselves. We're going to do this for ourselves. And then, you know, fast forward to 2014, and we actually did it. But to get there, for myself, I ended up actually saving 2 years of reserves, right? I was from 30 to 34. I was single. I was just coming out of a relationship, living in LA. I decided to get all my debt cleared off. I literally just paid everything off. I had no debt whatsoever, started putting money in the bank. And then I realized, you know what, I'm just going to try to save up 2 years worth of a salary, right? Nice. Didn't have many expenses because I knew we were going to pull the trigger at some point. And then, you know, fast forward to January, or actually towards the end of 2013, we were talking about, yeah, we're going to do it in 2014. And then we decided, and I remember Lalo telling me, March 15th, that's the date. That's when we're going to make our move. I was like, all right, perfect. All right. Saved up some more money, did some numbers. Come January 3rd or 4th or something, Lalo calls me up all frustrated. He's like, dude, I just quit. I can't do it anymore. He's like, we're going to have to do this now. Like, oh man, what happened to the plan, right? So that kind of made it real. At that point, we knew, okay, it's on. You know, everything that we've been planning, we've been talking about, the reserves that we were saving, right? We knew that we had to go all in on it. But I think where we were back then, right, where it was just me and Lalo, and then eventually we brought on our first team member, which I'm still great friends with the guy, awesome guy. And we started growing and growing and growing. Next thing you know, we're at 7 people, 10 people, 15 people, 20 people. And then during COVID, fortunately, man, we just kept growing. And then we're like, all right, 25, 30. I'm like, oh, okay, where do we need to cap this at, right? We're just growing and growing. But then you start realizing it's like, okay, all these things that I've been putting in place, all these systems and all these processes, right? So when we do grow, now here's where they come into play, right? And we just started kind of laying everything out. Unfortunately, now going on, we'll be hitting 10 years this August, hitting our 10 year anniversary. And, you know, we've been fortunate to work with some pretty big names out there, and you know, from small budgets to multi-million dollar budgets, creating these videos, these TV commercials, like incredible stuff. So it's an interesting path that where the guys that me and Tavis were back then in 10th grade to where I am now, you know, high school me wouldn't have told me, yeah, that's where you're going to end up, right? I would have never said that.
Amazing. That's amazing. And one of the things I would see from the outside looking in too is your ability. I mean, you and Lalo are perfect. You know, like, you guys work well together, right? I mean, he has a set of skills that are completely different than yours, and you have a set of skills that are completely different than his, right? And you guys complement each other well. And I'm sure that was a big part of the trajectory of Wallow and the business model. But even further than that, what I've seen is like your ability to leverage key players in your business that do something better than you could ever imagine you yourself doing it, right? And then you can focus on that one thing that you're really good at, right? And we talk about that too in our business models of really trying to give away some of that 80% of the busy work in our business that you know, ties us down and frustrates us, and, you know, it doesn't allow us to really make dollar productive decisions, you know. And the 20% of what we do is really what we master, right? That's really what we're good at that makes us continue on. I've seen you do that in your models for sure. So it's funny because even you and I this last year, there's certain things that I'll throw at you and say, hey, man, can you help me with this? Like, even the podcast stuff that you tweaked for us, you know, on the gloves, you're like, I was like, man, I appreciate it. You're like, no, this is great because I don't get to do this anymore. I'm happy to play with this because I don't do this kind of stuff anymore, you know? So,
yeah, you tweaked my art and I was super offended, Walter. I worked really hard on that. No, I'm kidding. No, I was really happy to have a professional. I sit there and play on Canva, you know, it's like drag and drop, you do this, and I'll sit there forever. And then that's a great example. When you have an expert who has an eye, who just knows some things and he makes these little bitty tweaks, you're like, yeah, that does look better. It's really hard to replicate experience and all that stuff. And surrounding yourself with people who have those little tweaks, those little expertises that can kind of round out what you have to offer, I think is the whole trick, you know, being able to find them, then trust them, hand things over in a way that is makes everyone better and y'all can all move forward is an art. You know, I have my first VA, the YouTube channel, yeah. The videos aren't perfect. You know, there's some changes I would probably make and I'm working on those, but in general, we're moving forward. I kind of trusted that interaction. He's doing that. So that's kind of my real first foray as far as, you know, this business and real estate and podcasting and all that sort of thing where I've kind of trusted that. But yeah, I got that sense first thing of your talent because you spent about a day with it, or I don't even know how long time wise you spent with it, but it definitely helped us out when trying to create that little piece of art.
No, man, I think what you're saying, you know, it goes back to that 80-20. And it's funny because I was talking with Tavis yesterday about the podcast in general and y'all too. And I was telling him, I was like, man, you're a natural at this host, right? The way you just carry the conversation, your voice and the way you kind of, you know, range it up, down, however you do it. So that's a natural ability that most people don't have, right? I tell people when they're presenting a script to a client, I go, learn your voice, what it can do, what it can't do, right? Because the other person is hearing something for the very first time, right? So you got to make sure you make them feel what your intentions are, right? If you want them to feel some sort of emotion, you know, do it right. And you do that really well. And even in this podcast now, some of the things that you kind of up in your personality to make sure that that comes through at a certain moment, right? Your timing is really good. And I was telling Tavis too, his voice, he's got a great voice as well too. And it's like, you bring these two things together, right? Y'all got a great show going on. And I think where people fall short is they just don't start, right? Yeah. Or they quit after the first five episodes and y'all are what, 42 episodes deep. And I've seen the progression, man. And it's going really well.
Yeah, you'll be 44. You'll be number 44. So, man, that's really nice. I appreciate that, Walter. That's really great. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, you got it, man.
So, Walter, real quick, we're getting close on time here, but obviously we're the Real Estate Heavyweights podcast and wanted to at least touch a little bit on real estate and some of our conversations. But, you know, obviously you see the value in real estate. I was happy to help facilitate you in a traditional way, and we found you a badass mid-century modern home and Farmers Branch, and you just now were able to, you know, put the finishing touches on it, polish it, and get it to I think what the vision was originally when you walked in the door, and maybe even exceeded that a little bit. But you can talk a little bit about you and Wallow investing in Arkansas and just kind of what your plans are kind of going forward and just some of the chats that we've had.
Definitely. So I think it's funny how life comes full circle, right? Me thinking I wanted to be an architect, right? And then now at this point in my life, how much I appreciate architecture and real estate even more. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, knowing you, Tavis, and all the conversations we've had and then watching all these podcasts, man. I mean, you say you're the new guy, right, Ashton? But I'll take that title from you, man. I haven't done a flip yet, but I'm thinking about doing my first flip because of y'all, right? I think Lalo and I invested in some land up in Arkansas in Bella Vista, which is north of Bentonville. So it's in this area that's called it's basically become the mecca of mountain biking. So the Walton family of Walmart has put so much money into this area, right? Bentonville and the surrounding area, and created this amazing bicycle mountain biking system, right? They've put a lot of money into it. So now it's become world renowned for mountain biking. So we went out there and checked out some land and decided to just, you know what, let's do it. So we've been holding on this land, and now conversations have come up to like, all right, now it's time to build, and what do we want to build on this thing? So I think it comes down to these podcasts that I've been listening to from y'all, the conversations with Tavis, and then going through what I went through with my house renovation. I think Tavis was the greatest teacher of all time here, because I think he knew exactly what he was doing, right? He goes, I'm going to show you the way, but I'm going to let you go. So it was a baptism by fire, right? I've never dealt with any like subcontractors or seeing my house split wide open, you know, yeah, where everything's just gutted.
And y'all lived there while this was all happening, right?
So we moved out for about 2 months, and then we thought things were going to, you know, and that's one of the biggest lessons I learned was, you know, things never go to schedule. And so I think we moved back in, and then we realized like, well, we don't have a functioning kitchen, right? So we ended up basically cooking everything in an air fryer, microwave for about, man, 2 months. So yeah, new appreciation for food.
Yeah. So I know up there in Bentonville, are you thinking about sort of short-term rental? Or are you thinking I know Jason Castro was telling Tavis they did something north of here that's kind of a cool cabin type enclave where there's three or four that are sort of attached, but you can do them separately. Or what is y'all's, the thing that y'all are kind of even pondering on doing up there? Is it specific, or you're just kind of like, ah, oh, let's kind of feel out the area for a while and see what the thing needs, see what the market demands, or what are your thoughts there?
So we started kind of looking at what's around there, right? Knowing that the majority of the people that are going up there, most of them are going there to enjoy mountain biking. So we've had conversations about putting together this ultimate mountain biker's cabin, right? Where we pretty much outfit this thing with everything you need. So all you need to bring is your bike. Your bike and your helmet and your pads, that's it, right? Everything else from, you know, equipment to fixing your bike to extra parts and all that stuff. It's something that we've talked about, kind of just building this ultimate mountain biker's cabin. And then ideally it would be great to do these longer rentals, right? Versus kind of just the weekend type thing, just from listening to what y'all been saying, right? And Tavis's experience with his midterm and long-term rentals. I think it's still trying to figure out that aspect of it too, right? So it's just the early preliminary stages of it right now. And I think at some point we may talk to you, Tavis, too, to kind of just figure out what something like this would look like as well.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. And what he's talking about with Castro, Jason Castro. And if you don't know who that was, he was an American Idol contestant and went all the way up early on. It was years ago, you know, he was from Rockwall Dreads at the time. But anyways, he's been in the real estate game for quite some time now and does a really good job. They build a great product on their new builds or in the investment game. They have the stays, you know, these Airbnbs that they've done. Anyways, great guy. But they just developed and launched this. I just shared it like yesterday and the day before, but it's like northwest of here, I think on the way to Benbrook, maybe somewhere out that way. It's about an hour and a half west of here. They call it kind of the North Texas Hills or the North Texas Hill Country. So, you know, like you're on your way to Wichita Falls, you know. Anyways,
the beautiful town of Wichita Falls. I mean, everyone that's going there to vacation, they're going to stop short and be like, you know, why even go to Wichita Falls?
Why don't we stop there? So he's really pushing right now for the eclipse, right? Because he's like, hey, you know, book this place, come watch the eclipse out here. You know, it's wide open stars. But what they did was they built these three really modern cabins on the same property. And so you can rent them all at the same time, or you can rent them individually, but something like that might be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, for the Arkansas deal, you know, you got a big crew or like a race going on that weekend or something, but I think that's a great, you know, it's a great idea, you know, to kind of find that niche and, you know, and then you start developing it and build it up, man.
Yeah. And I think the whole experiential thing, and I've said it before, if I could do something like that, I always admire Disney and Universal. And the older I get, the more I enjoy going to those parks because you're just immersed in this world for a little while, you know, and they do such a great job of transporting you. And I think I actually saw a short-term cabin up in the Smokies that was done extremely well, super kind of pop culture, bright, vibrant art. But it didn't really look like a cabin, but it just stops people from scrolling. And then when people are there, it burns this memory of vision and smells and this experience that it goes beyond just staying for a while. And it's this functional thing. You could have it functional for the bike, but I think with your art background, you have a huge leg up on people to say, okay, let's do function, but then let's also just make this a memory that people are going to either want to come back to or they're never going to forget. So I think that part of you could easily translate into the vacation rental. And even if you're competing a bit against a lot of other things, yours is going to stand out just from your art background and kind of see how that's played out in some other vacation stuff that it really sticks out to me. So I think you're on the right track and it sounds really cool. I hope you guys move forward with that.
No, appreciate it, Ben. And I think that's a cool idea in taking it that one leg up, right? Like using art and blending it with mountain biking, right? And what does that look like? And what's the ultimate product? I think that's a pretty memorable thing, right? Because I've ran across some things where I'm just scrolling and scrolling and I stop on this thing and it just blows you away, the thing that, what it is and the experience that you're going to get from it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Tavis, do you have anything else that you wanted to touch base on Walter with? Does he need to go into any high school stories or graffiti stories, anything like that? Well, what's funny about graffiti is, so my son, he's graduating, you know, we're doing senior pictures and little news. He got accepted to Texas Tech last minute. He decides he wants to go to college.
That's
he's
awesome.
Been saying no college for a while, 2 weeks late, you know. But speaking of like that spark, you know, you're talking about that spark. He went to this trumpet competition. They got third in the country. They met this college group that got first in the country. They happened to be from Texas Tech. And just a few of these guys spoke life into the idea that he was talented and he shouldn't just let this go. And I mean, then he's like, well, I think I'm going to apply. Then he gets in and it just changes the trajectory of life, you know, and I had that vocally. I sing some. And I remember in sixth grade, I did this little solo and one teacher sort of said, that was really good. And I still remember that. And so to think that one little emphasis to say, yeah, you know, you're a little bit extra talented, then you keep putting more effort. People want to be good at things and you put effort towards things. So I think that really speaks to a lot of people. And I think it encourages, you should encourage people to speak life into other people, you know, try to be a help to somebody, try to give a positive word to someone, especially if you're an expert at something and say, hey, that's really good. You should keep going with that, because just little bitty things like that can completely change the trajectory of someone's life. And I say all that to say, as Luke's been out taking pictures for seniors and, you know, senior pictures and, you know, all this stuff, graffiti is everywhere. There is graffiti over like professional stuff over at Velvet Taco in Grandscape. Yeah. We haven't mentioned Grandscape, so we're legally obligated to mention that. So, but then there's a sushi place across the street that has graffiti. It's real. Like, I love it, but it's really funny how it was sort of, you drive through Oakland now, and I mean, it's like a mess and they're trying to get rid of it. But then when you sort of refine it, there's companies that pay big money to have people come over and do graffiti on the side of their wall. So I think that's a funny full circle thing.
We used to define it, you know, like tagging, it was what it was called back in the day. And tagging was just the messy stuff that, you know, gangs use and, you know, people use to just kind of mark their territory, if you will. And then you had, you know, graffiti or what we just called murals, or we called them bombs back in the day. And that's where the art comes from, right? That's where you really see the talent and the stuff that, of what these people can do. And I never really mastered the art of the spray can, you know, I mean, I could draw it on paper and get pretty good. And I'd start working the can and I get pretty close, but it was not to the degree of some of these guys, man, just got that stuff down. And how fast they could put some of this stuff up, man, is amazing. But I see them, you know, on social media and, you know, follow a bunch of different pages, man. And it's just amazing. You know, it's just a different art. It's a different talent. It's pretty cool.
I was going to say, I will say this. If any of the listeners do want some stories from Tavis and I's past, you know, just hit us up and let us know. Let Tavis know and we'll go grab some coffee and I'll fill you. Yeah. Ashton, I would love to go to lunch with you and Tavis, man, and just kind of get to know you, man. I think
man.
You're kind of like, I see myself like you, because you started here, you went here, you ended up here, now you're going here, right? And I think that's great, man. It's like, never settle for anything, and you're always going to have to always constantly be moving towards something else that's going to make you better. So I would love you know, go grab lunch with both of y'all, man, and just kind of get to know you more.
Yeah, I would love that. So, man, it's been awesome hearing from you. I know this is a departure a little bit from our nuts and bolts real estate stuff, but there's so much value in other people's experience, and real estate's everywhere and everyone, you know, but the fact that you're thinking about doing short term, and I know you, that mid-century modern, especially, you know, I don't know that you'll ever do walnut kitchen cabinets again. You know, I've heard the trials and tribulations of difficulties of getting a really good walnut front on a kitchen cabinet. So you could probably tell some stories about that. But the insight into business and creativity, so we really appreciate it. So if people wanted to kind of check you out, check out your work and get connected with you, tell them the best way to do that. And we can definitely link stuff in the show notes and social and that sort of thing.
Definitely. I mean, hit us up on our website. It's walloinc.com. So that's WALOINC.com. I mean, you can see a lot of the stuff that we've done for various different clients, and then you can just shoot us a message through that and we can connect.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Well, Walter, I really, really appreciate it. I know Tavis was excited about this. He's been telling me for a while, we got to get my friend Walter on. So I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad it definitely a great interview. For those of you who have not yet, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Find us on social. I'm Ashton Hines, the Dallas Real Estate Guy, on Instagram and on Facebook. Tavis is Travis without the R. You have Tavis Westbrook Designs. You can find him on Instagram and Facebook. And yes, we do have a YouTube page now with our videos of the podcast. And hopefully at some point we'll start dropping our shorts on there. We're going to drop short videos on there. No one wants to see Tavis and I dropping our shorts on any sort of video, but we will be dropping short form video on YouTube and try to carry over some of the stuff that we do on Instagram. So,
and Walter Braza, he's on Instagram as well and Facebook as well. So you can find him individually. If you'd like to friend request him as well.
Yeah, awesome. We will definitely link all that. Until next time, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you.